Welcome back to episode 138 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to seek and glorify the ratings gain, but we also talk about ratings plateaus and maybe even the pits of despair below that. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our Queen level supporters, Mike Robeschi, Blundergoat, Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Don Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and King level supporter, Ian Samples. Note to myself, when I'm not feeling well, don't try to do that all in one breath. It almost killed me. So thanks for being so many supporters. If you want to appear on the show, you can fill out the Google form in the show notes. We all want to hear your story. Another place you can go is DMing me on Twitter. And if you're interested in Noel Studer's next level training program, well, that's great. You can use the code that's been in the show notes for months now. But if you really want something hot, fresh, and new, you can check out Noel Studer's new course that's geared for more of beginners. It's called Beginner Chess Mastery. It will help you get to 1200. That is the claim. And it's a good course. So if you're interested in that one, there's a code in the show notes. You can get a discount, can support the show. Everyone wins. Also, I've been streaming a lot of calculation puzzles from the chess gym lately. If you want to join the gym, there's a link there, and that supports the show. So many ways to support the show now. It's great. And now it's time to bring on a returning guest, Noel Studer. He's a grandmaster. He's well known as a chess coach and an author, and he has a new course out called Beginner Chess Mastery. Noel, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today? I don't even know how much chess you play.
I'm always scared of this question of playing chess. First of all, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me, Karen. And no, I haven't played any chess yet. But actually, for me, that's a good sign because if I procrastinate, I play chess. So,
So when you don't play chess, that means you are on the ball. You did all the tasks you were supposed to do.
That sounds very good, but I would say at least I was decently, concentrated throughout the day.
Okay, gotcha. I really feel that right now. I have a pile of papers I'm supposed to grade. And every time I play chess, it is me not grading those papers. And then there's a little guilt also. It makes it hard to focus. You know what I should do, Noel? I should just grade the papers, then play chess.
Sounds like an insane idea.
All right. Well, welcome back. It's been a while since we talked to you. I guess I want to start with this. What have you been up to? It's been 9 months. What's your life been like?
Life's good. Life's good. We are planning a U.S. trip, actually. Cool. So we'll be in the U.S. for 10 weeks.
10 weeks? So, that's quite a trip.
Yeah, it's coming up. And we'll do some West Coast, some private stuff, some national parks. We'll do some chess tournaments, we'll do some collaborations. It's just absolutely lovely. Yeah, we'll start in late April, and then we'll come back July 1st. So that's what we've been up to, next to creating content and trying to enjoy your lives.
Nice. Well, I have to imagine you're going to be in Los Angeles, because why wouldn't you come to Los Angeles? So when you're here, you know, send me a line. I'll see. Maybe we can do something. We'll just hang out. You and I hanging out by the beach. It'll be great.
Let's go to Venice Beach or to the Muscle Beach. Yeah.
We'll
show off our biceps. Yeah.
That sounds perfect. That sounds perfect.
It's good.
All right. Well, I thought I would bring Noel on today, and we could do two things. We could, first of all, take a look at my chess from nine. So he came on last time, 9 months ago. And Noel took a good look at my chess, and we talked about training programs. He's going to be disappointed. Don't tell him what I've been doing. And then we're going to shift into sort of taking a look at why create a course specifically for beginners. What's his goal? What's his goal for those of you out there who are interested in the course? So Noel, 9 months ago, it feels like you recommended that I do a lot of tactics, that I do the chess. What was the ladder? Oh my goodness, now I can't remember. What is the name of this? The ladder thing?
Step method.
Oh my goodness. All right. Now I have to do the big reveal. I'm not feeling that well today. I feel like it's really coming across now. I'm hoping that I can power through and everything's gonna sound great, but I might forget basic things like the steps method. Okay, so you recommended the steps method, you recommended playing. I'm struggling to remember, were there any other recommendations, or was it mostly work on tactics?
Rook end games, right?
Yes, I remember you saying more Rook endgames. No, for those of you who don't know Noel's thing, it's like try to do the things that are going to give you the most bang for your buck, and Rook endgames, unfortunately, are not in that bucket while they may be fun. And
Yep,
fun.
that's a nice summary. That's a nice summary.
Yeah, and for many of you, you might not be thinking Rook endgames are fun anyway, so then you're fine. Okay, so here's the starting spot, Noel. I didn't do much with the steps method. I was on it, and I realized I just really hated it. I don't know why. It might even just be because you were like, you really need to do it. And I was like, what? I need to do it. I don't know. Something happened. I stopped doing it, and once I stopped doing it, I was able to justify like the chess.com puzzles. They're not as good, but I'm still getting a lot out of them. I don't know. No, you can chide me if you want. It's fine. It's fine.
I'm happy with that trade-off, actually. If it's, as long as I'm, pushing somebody towards a tactics book and they still do tactics exercises online, as long as you do them decently well,
Okay.
that's still something. I was thinking when you said that you feel bad about, saying that and that you weren't a good boy, that you were going to say, well, I haven't solved one tactics exercise, but now I play seven different openings
Ooh, yeah.
and I know how to blindly checkmate with knight and bishop.
Yes, no, I am still very narrow on my openings, and I still can't do the knight bishop checkmate. My coach
Okay.
even said at one point, he's like, no, you have to know how to do it. And I was like, I don't really want to spend the time. I think it's not relevant. And he's like, I can show you in 3 minutes. And then like 20 minutes later, I still did not know how to do it. And it was like, you know what? Let's tuck that aside for later. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a funny one. I mean, showing it once, everything has its merits and so on and so forth. But yeah, I think many coaches don't understand that just if you say, well, this is the method and now just do it, that if their student has 10 seconds on the clock and is in a blitz game, they are not just, oh, wait, 7.5 years ago, I remember this was the method. Now let me do it. No, you just forget it and that's it. But yeah,
I
no,
do
but
have a
actually,
plan though. If I get in a constructed game, like in a regular game, and I have time on the clock, I'm gonna very confidently start doing the W and hope they resign. That's the plan.
yeah, the W, that's it. You just need to win, right? Wait, W was something else.
Yeah, there's some other things, but
But
I don't remember all of them. Just to start doing the W with the knight and be like, time to resign now.
I know what I'm doing here.
Exactly.
You
We can
just do
all
it
see this is heading
somewhere,
to checkmate eventually.
yeah? Now, actually, one idea I like is for these kind of things is just to not do them until you have one in the game, and then you're more interested in it because you felt the pain of not knowing how to do it, or maybe you know the W, but you're not like, how did it exactly go? And it doesn't matter because your brain will not want to focus on that as long as you don't have a real experience tied with it. Then when you lose a tough game, if it's even, against somebody you hated or against your biggest rival or whatever, and then you didn't win this game, you're like, okay, now I want to study it and I want to remember it forever. And then you're in the state of mind where maybe half an hour of study can really, bring you a lot of benefits for the future. But there's a lot of people like, yeah, now I'll re remember, I'll do 5 minutes of repetition of knight and bishop. No, just solve a tactics puzzle. It's okay.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense because I that really resonates that when I have a position in a game that I've sat and stewed with for, 30 minutes or something, then I'm highly motivated to go figure out like, okay, next time I encounter this, what am I going to do? And I feel like that sticks, whereas just the random things I study, they stick a lot less. So that makes a lot of sense. That makes
Yeah.
sense.
But actually, coming to your games, have looked at your games.
Uh-oh.
That's much better.
Oh, okay.
I was really happy. I don't know if you had the same feeling, but I felt like you've progressed to different eras, which is what improving looks like. Like you're not
Nice.
stuck at the same eras that I think we've talked about.
Okay.
And I was very happy. So I was curious to hear, would you think what went in the last 9 months? Like, not only rating wise, obviously rating wise, that's sometimes also good, but how do you feel at the board?
Let's see. So I feel like First of all, I feel like I've tried very hard to get under control that thing I used to do where it'd be like I'd calculate 11 moves and have these brilliant ideas, but then I was wrong on move one. So I only
Fancy
did it
play syndrome,
once.
yeah.
Yeah, I did it once and it was very memorable. And as I was doing it, I was like, Kevin, you're doing it. And then my brain was like, yeah, but you're doing it right this time. And of course, it wasn't right. It never is right. So I only did it once, so that's good. It's funny, like you asked me ahead of time, like what are you thinking about your games? And I was like, I don't know, I play about the same. At first I wrote in my notes like I'm not missing as many tactics. And then I looked at him and I was like, what are you talking about? Like every game there's a big tactic that either you or your opponent missed. Sometimes not, but still tactics are a fundamental piece of the game. I went through a run where I was defending well and like I wasn't losing games, and I had a couple of like really tough games that old me would have just collapsed, but then the new me is like, hey, you know what? It's hard to win at chess. Like, just hold together, don't do anything ridiculous, and you can probably get a draw here. So that I was happy with, and I've can my openings continue to be solid. I'd say I'm never losing in the opening. When I'm playing the openings, I know, and I don't know, that would be my summary. I'm happy to hear you say that you feel like I've made great progress because I don't feel it. I'm just kind of like, eh, I don't know. I feel like I'm a little bit better, but I can't even really pinpoint like how am I better or where am I better. I just feel like I am getting a little bit better.
And what does the rating say? Is there any rating increase or?
Yeah, so I looked at the three big ratings I used. Chess.com Rapid, when we spoke, I was 1800, but I had like just passed it and I was dropping beneath it. And now I'm 1864, which is quite a bit better. My Blitz rating back then was like 1350. I'm now hanging out around the 1500 mark. And then USCF, which is my main one. At that moment, I had actually just had a good tournament to get to 1631 before dropping all the way back to like 1580. Now I'm 1742. I peaked at 1781. So all the ratings seem to be, trending up, which
Well,
is good.
that's more than 100 points plus in USCF, no?
Yeah, it is, but it's weird because my USCF was higher than that. It bounced quite a bit, but I do feel like I'm doing better in my USCF games. I do feel more confident. I feel like I do better in them.
I mean, I think it's, when we talked, I remember it was really the despair, no? You
Oh,
tweeted
yeah.
something about like it's horrible and whatever, and I was like,
Yeah.
hey, I can help. So
Yeah.
we went from despair to maybe being a little bit too harsh on yourself, because I think you've gone out of this valley of despair and have just progressed and play better games. That's what I would say. I was really very, very positive. And you know that I was harsh last time, so I'm not just telling BS just to try to appear nice. So I'll tell you if you do stupid stuff.
Nice. Okay. Cool. So you're
So
seeing
yeah,
some
that's.
progress.
Yeah, definitely. So I think there are less big mistakes, like just going from, very good position to just immediately lost. There are some mistakes, but I think that would be my interpretation, is more of a decision-making mistake and not of a tactical mistake. So I
Interesting.
think the decision-making process, we can talk about that, what is the difference and how you can maybe train that. There is a problem. And then I think you can really go a step up and you can start working on some structures that you play out of your openings. Because there were, I'm just looking at my notes, there are two games where you really got positionally outplayed. You didn't really make any big mistakes, but your opponent just understood the game better. And that's actually amazing if you have that, because that means you can really learn some new strategy. You can do the interesting stuff to most people, which is trying to get better at chess. And you're not just, well, I played a good game, but then I blundered a piece. That's it. Like, let's just stop blundering pieces. So that's why I felt that you made a big progress, is that you have interesting problems to solve, interesting mistakes to solve. And that's usually a very good sign.
Okay, cool. Also sounds harder, right? It's a little bit easier to just be like, what's your problem? Just do a million tactics. Now it's kind of like diving into the structures, which I agree. is the fun part. I remember very vividly, this is probably one of the games, I just moved a knight to a slightly less good square, and it just, the whole game collapsed on my head, and I was like, wow, like, this is such an interesting mistake, because it wasn't like a tactical blunder. It was just like, your knight was guarding some squares, you moved it, and like, it wasn't just a weakness, it was just like, everything fell apart. And I remember going over with my coach and being like, I feel like this was the pivotal moment. But, like, it doesn't seem like it's that bad of a move. And he's like, no, it's not. But in this position, you know, like, just the way the structure was, everything collapsed. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where you can, you know, get the nuances going. Obviously, I think it's very important whenever you have such a phase, I just want to say it, that you still have to work on your tactics. Okay, everybody out there listening, like, just because you're not doing many blunders at the moment, you need to stay sharp. So that should always be part of your training. But you can start to focus more also on other things. But make sure, if you're just saying, okay, now I'm, you know, the most tactically, it's like a, let's say a basketball player says, okay, now I've got the 2-point throws, I've got them. I never have to train them anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not how it works.
Right.
You just have to do that. So you need to keep doing the tactics, but then we can progress to some more interesting stuff. And that will be the structures sometimes. The Caro Advanced especially. I think you had a lot of games there, actually. It seems like on your level or just randomly, you had a lot of games there. And it is a super difficult structure to play. Like, even for strong players, that's where you can really outplay many players, because it's so complex. It's so difficult. You usually have these weaknesses on both sides where, like, you have this d6 square that usually, you know, if a knight gets there, that's horrible. But they might play c4 and offer the d5 square, and they have a weak d4 pawn. So there's all these kind of things going on. It's not just a regular e4, e5, and everything looks normal.
Yeah.
So that will be something that I would look, if I were your coach, would look with you at and just say, okay, how can you understand in general those positions? So you have like a guidance of like what is good, what isn't.
Yeah.
And I felt that will tie also into maybe the decision-making progress, that you maybe lack like a some kind of compass during game. Like, what am I even trying to do? Who is better? Who has to push for the advantage? Who should play safe? Like, this kind of bird's eye overview that I would say that helps then with a correct decision-making as well.
Yeah, a couple things there. I totally agree. I see a lot of Caro Advanced, especially the short variation is the one I was really struggling with. The whole, like, basically the quiet one, right? It's like the more bombastic ones where they're very engaging early. It's easy to find, like, the forcing line. Whereas with the short variation, it's so subtle and positional. And we figured out something weird that I've been playing, that I don't know, I'll have to revisit if it's too weird, but something to deal with it. And then also with the decision making process, I very much resonate that I have some problems there. The biggest problem I have is this. Like, I'm pushing, and then the game shifts and I'm no longer pushing. But in my head, I'm like, no, I'm pushing. And you're like, if I had just, like, if it wasn't my game and I was looking at someone else's game, I'd be like, no, they're pushing you, right? You can see this. But for some reason, I have a hard time sort of shifting gears midstream and understanding, or even vice versa, right? They're attacking me. I'm defending. And it's like, here's your moment to strike. And I'm like, no, I'm just trying not to lose. I'm just defending. I think that's a big area for me, that whole shifting gears. Wow, what a great book idea. Shifting gears. And it's all about that moment where the game shifts. No, go ahead, write. It's fine. I'm happy to read this.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, actually. This is one of the biggest psychological struggles everyone has in chess, because we have a story linked to the game, right?
Yeah.
And we humans love stories, even if they are not correct. But it's like, I outplayed him, so it's like, I feel like I should win the game because I outplayed them. But, well, the position maybe tells something else, right? You made one stupid move and maybe you're lost. So that's something difficult. But I think in general, what helps, and that's difficult, but just having a habit of getting this bird's eye view sometimes during a game, of like just saying what's actually going on. It sometimes it felt to me, you had this one game where you really, you even said like, this knight was coming to d6 and it seemed strange, but I just thought the calculation works anyway.
Right.
And then what I would say is like, it seemed like, let's take the sport again. It seemed like you were up, but you were taking risk, right? It's like, let's say it's Super Bowl. Your team is 7 points up and you're just saying, let's, you know, fourth down, let's just YOLO it. We don't care. Like, why would you do that, right? It doesn't make sense. But to if you just didn't know what's the score, you might take this decision, right? You okay. It's sometimes, as I understand American football, sometimes you do it, but not always.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit what happens sometimes, especially in this moment that I remember vividly, is like your position was so amazing. I think you were even a pawn up. And there was absolutely no reason to even start calculating, right? So if you if you like go out, and so bird's eye view is like, I'm a pawn up, I have to beg the structure. My only problem is my king. I need to get castled. Yep. And then you're like, okay, let's get the knight out, let's castle. That's it. You could have taken the decision in like 30 seconds to 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Because you don't even start calculating. When you don't know exactly what's going on, you're just, oh, that move looks interesting. And then I play this move. And then, oh, I can sacrifice. And then, oh, I win something. And then you can make mistakes, because then we have calculation mistakes. If you would be totally perfect in calculation, it wouldn't happen as well. But that's just something that we just need to keep working on. But like just the idea of you don't even need to think about that. Like it's just a simple decision making that you need. And it's very hard with the adrenaline pumping and you're in the game and so on. But working on a consistent like thought process for you, at least some questions to fall back on, I think could be extremely useful for you. So you know where you're standing. You can, for example, if you like sports, you can really ask yourself, am I up or down? Just like in general, because the one up usually doesn't have to take risks. So you don't calculate lines that are risky and so on and so forth. So that's could be a little idea there.
Yeah, I'm taking notes. This is great. It's the first interview where I'm like taking notes on the suggestions of the author in the moment. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, my coach and I have talked about this a lot, actually. He's like, so we just say counterplay. Like, why are you going to make a move that gives your opponent tons of counterplay if you're winning? Like, just take the easy way to win. You don't have to take the cool way. You don't have to take the fastest way. Just win the game, right? Like, don't. And so I've been trying to work on that. I just kind of think like, okay, is this giving up too much counterplay? Am I giving up a bunch of open files that I don't need to? Am I giving up some king safety that I don't need to? So I'm trying, but I think you're definitely right that it still keeps creeping up, right? That I keep doing this thing where I'm making riskier moves than I need to.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's also sometimes, and I had this already, is you see like two moves in a position. And I remember this game, you were a pawn up again. And you said, oh, if I move back the queen there, the queen looks so silly there.
Yeah.
And then you just, okay, I don't make that, right? So I need to move the queen somewhere else.
Right, right.
But on the other square, you opened up the diagonal for the opponent's queen and the opponent started attacking you.
Yep.
And it's like, but because the thought process is not complete, you're just like, this move looks weird, so I'll just play the other one.
Yeah.
And in the extreme, that happens even to grandmasters, where we just say, for example, also, I don't like a move repetition, so let me just play on without even calculating what are the consequences of playing on. And sometimes, actually, a friend of mine, one of my favorite stories, he didn't want a draw and he had two moves with his king. He was like, my opponent is worse than me. This move makes a draw. So let's move the other one. It was made in two.
Whoops.
So it's like, okay, that's nice. Like you did the, you know, there's Agar talks about this also, the way of excluding moves, right?
Yeah.
But you can't just exclude a move without like just running into a checkmate. So that's sometimes what can happen if we don't have this overview. And I don't know how much you like talk to yourself in words during a game, but mm-hmm. to me that helps a lot. If I would, sometimes I was thinking like, what would I, how would I explain this position to somebody else?
Ooh, I like that line.
And then it's like somebody weaker than you, how can you explain what's important? And then you start like, I'm a pawn up, so I don't need to take risks. There's like something, oh, okay. My opponent is trying to play on the white squares. Okay, let's keep control of them or something like that, right? And then when it's in the words, it can be a little bit easier to understand if you're about to do something that is just emotional, but it's not rational. Like you just want to make a move or you don't want to make the other move.
Yeah.
But you don't really, you know, have the full view of that decision.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think it would also help me when I don't fully understand an opponent's move. Sometimes I'll just kind of go like, well, that's a weird move. They're not good at chess either. So, you know, and then I move on instead of like, if I was actually explaining it to like my daughter, I'd have to be like, okay, well, let's really try to figure out why they made this weird move. You know, like it looks weird, but let's get into like, well, why would they make that weird move? Well, they're trying to do this. Oh, actually, now that I look at it even more, it is weird, but it does let them do this if I go in this direction. So now that I fully understand their thought, instead of just labeling it as weird and moving on. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think I'm going to work
on it. Yeah, or just what if this move was good? Why would it be good? Something like that, yeah. Right? And then you just, I remember the I think that this one was the game way back, the first one that I've seen. And it was, at the end, it was a draw because you had bishop, pawn, and the bishop was on the wrong square, right? So you had light square bishop and the h pawn. So king was on h8 and you couldn't win that endgame.
Yeah.
And
talk about bringing up painful memories.
Your opponent basically put the bishop somewhere where it automatically lost a pawn. But yep. Invited you to trade the knight.
Yep.
And you were like, that guy must be stupid, right? Let's just take. And it was such a weird move because the bishop could move also somewhere else where it wouldn't give up this pawn. So in this case, like, well, if that move makes sense, why could it, right? What could be the idea? And the king just runs to h8 and you were like, oh, you were smart. So that's like being able to sometimes talk to yourself in that way can be extremely useful. Because if we made an experiment and I would be behind you during your games and I would just like a stadium speaker, I would just say the current score. Position of the, just the obvious facts.
Right.
You would play much better chess.
Yeah, that's true.
Everybody would, right? If you would just say, white has developed all these pieces, but the rook is not playing yet. Hint, hint. What might you want to do?
Yeah. Right?
And sometimes we're so into or thinking of concrete stuff that we forget about these big picture things. And I think that's extremely important to try to take into account of what am I even doing? Okay, I'm trying to win, right? To win, I don't have to be 7 pieces up. So if I'm 3 pieces up already, I don't have to capture another one. I just have to trade down, like all these kind of ideas. And then you have more of a guideline of where to look for good moves or what moves could be the right direction. Yeah,
and like that one position you just described, it was an end game. And I calculated so deeply, should I take the pawn? And I didn't just do the basic thing of like, the bishop doesn't cover the queening square. Like, no calculation was needed. It was just like a basic endgame principle that I know that I've seen several times. And it was very, I calculated like 25 moves, the whole sequence down. I was like, all right, he's making a mistake. I know he thinks he's a genius, but he's making a mistake. And then like 2 moves later, he just moves his king back. And I'm like, wait, what? Oh no, no. Can we go back?
Like, wait, now I have to make a compliment. You're smart, so let's take the moves back, okay? Now that we know you're smart, yeah. Let's just...
You proved it, but you know it was a losing position. Come on, let's go back. Yeah, and so, he did one of those sheepish things. He's like, yeah, I know, sorry. And I'm like, nope, that was my bad. Like, I definitely blew it.
Yeah. I seen a short recently, which was fun for me to see, because it was like how grandmasters can see so many moves ahead in the end game. And I think it was about this kind of end game that the bishop and the pawn can't win.
Yeah.
And I was like looking at Alessia and was saying, hey, that's just complete BS. Like, this grandmaster saw two moves ahead and he just knew that it's a draw. He is not calculating. But everybody that doesn't understand the game of chess were like, oh my God, he saw everything ahead. It's like, no, it's just, he just knew, okay, bishop is on the wrong square. Let's make that move in 2 seconds. Like, it's just, but that's sometimes what it can seem like to maybe amateurs. And what we need to remember is the thinking of the basic stuff and not making the fancy things.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so, all right. Sounds like we've got some good stuff here to help me out. My summary is take less chances when I'm up. Have more of a thinking process where I'm more regularly checking in with the actual game that is happening instead of following the story that has been, pretending like I'm explaining the position to somebody else when I don't understand a move. What if this move was good? Why? What makes it good? And then it sounds like you're saying trying to have basically a running evaluation, which is something I really, really struggle with. Whenever I've tried to do it, I'm just like, okay, so I was working through the book, Think Like a Super GM, and it'd be like, solve the position and then give me an eval. And I could solve the position correctly, and my evals would be so wrong sometimes. It's ridiculous. I'm like, I got the answer right, and I still can't get the eval right. I don't know. Evals are something I'm still really struggling with.
I think it's something that comes with a lot of experience, because just the fact of seeing a position, evaluating yourself, and then hearing what somebody else says, that is super important. But I think the big key there is really that many people that study chess or watch chess especially, they just hear evaluations without using their own brain first. That's why playing games is so hard, right? You don't have this narrative of somebody guiding you through it, but you're just lost. So basically, if your eval is not great, try to, as often as possible, whenever you study chess, try to put an eval on it and then to compare it. So even when you watch games, right, you watch a commentary, for example, try to look at a position and think, what would I say this position is? And then you can switch on the engine, or then you can listen to the commentators. But you want to first force yourself, because once you hear the eval, it's so obvious that this is the eval, right? Yeah. But if you haven't heard it, you might realize, oh, actually, that's not so obvious. What happens sometimes also is we say, this is only a matter of technique, right? And then the author won't even explain things anymore.
Right.
And then it just seems so obvious. Like, this guy had just was a pawn up and now he won the game. And that's super simple. Like, I can do the same. Yeah. And then you're a pawn up and you're like, wait, what was that matter of technique now? Like, what should I do actually?
You just look at your opponent and you go, this is a matter of technique, right? Now you resign.
Now pawn. Wait, what are you doing now?
Yeah.
So that's also one of the things that really this training and tournament difference, that really trying to put yourself in the shoes of being in a tournament and having to explain, even if you see a puzzle, try to explain shortly to yourself what's going on. Like, some people even don't check if there is material more or less. They would just start calculating, like, okay, take stock. You are a piece down. Winning a piece back is maybe not the solution. If you want to equalize, yes. But winning a pawn for sure isn't smart. You're a piece down, right? So you need to get that full overview, maybe ask yourself, what would be my opponent's next move? And then you can start solving the puzzle, because like this, you train your thought process to be like in the game.
Okay. I think this is also probably one of the shortcomings of things like chess.com puzzles, the eval is always you're crushing, right? It's just a matter of how much you're crushing by. That's one of the things I've noticed when I solve puzzles at the chess gym is they're trickier, right? They're more real life, and tons of them I go in being like, it's a puzzle. I'm looking for the win. And then I don't find a win. And I'm like, what? Well, I'm going to say this is the answer, but it's certainly not winning. And they're like, congratulations, you reached equality. You were on the precipice of losing. And I'm like, what kind of puzzle is this? It mirrors real chess?
That's absurd.
So, yeah, I think maybe doing more puzzles like that that mirror real chess is probably a start of an answer.
Yeah, I like that as well. That's something I did actually a lot, where my coach Marcus Rugger would just send me like PDF files with 6 or 12 positions on them. And I just had to write down what I was going to play. And some of them were tactics. Some of them were just develop a piece. Some of them were, it seems like this tactic really works. But after 6 moves, my opponent is actually having a strike back, and that's why you shouldn't go over the tactics. Yeah. So like these kind of things, which was the hardest training I did, but usually that's also where you really make the big jumps or the improvements, because you really force yourself to think like you were in a game.
Yeah, sounds fun and hard. I'm wondering if another possible thing I could do to address the running eval is, when I go through games, instead of playing guess the move, what if I played guess the eval? And it was like every move, I turn off the engine, try to figure out what's happening in the position, give an evaluation for the position, and then turn on the engine. I wonder if it would get boring because the eval wouldn't change that much throughout the game.
Yeah, that can be difficult, especially if it's like a grandmaster's book or something, because usually they're the outline of the game is very linear, right? Yeah. You don't have these big ups and downs, but you can try that in general. You can maybe look at more, you know, blitz or rapid games, or maybe games of a little bit weaker opponents where there are big changes. And then I think for you, whenever you play a game, usually you have some kind of idea what's going on, right? Your story. And then I think the important part is always to ask yourself, like, what has changed? Because if you're a pawn up and your opponent just makes a positional move, probably the eval is similar. And I think you should never have the evaluation like being it's 0.8 for white, but it should be like it's better for white. Okay. Or black has a huge attack, but white is a piece up. Like, try to make it more really human. It's more of a, like, you can even use, like they use in poker, probabilities. You can say like, I think if nothing strange happens, I'll win that game. So I'll just need to avoid counterplay, right? These kind of more human evaluations just tell you also what you're looking for and what not.
Okay.
So I think you can practice it most obviously in your games, really by also asking like, what happened? Maybe pieces got traded off. It's time to reevaluate. Maybe somebody captured a pawn. It's time to reevaluate. Whatever happened, like your king is suddenly in the center. Oh, Lord, let's try to reevaluate or whatever. So there it's the time to think about that. And yeah, as you mentioned, the Grandmaster games, it's not so interesting to say like, okay, it's maybe 0.37 now, and before it was 0.24. It's like, yeah, whatever. It's like, even I can't do that. It's just impossible.
Maybe I should do this with my own games. I could just look through my own games and try to do this guess the eval thing. That might help me be more sensitive to when my own games I'm sort of missing the big changes.
Absolutely. At least for the analysis, when you analyze, like the first time you look at your game, try to write with words in what moment you thought the evaluations changed. Yeah. That's super useful for your coach, right? Yep. Your coach watches through it and it's like, okay, you thought you were absolutely winning here, but actually your opponent is on the offense. What happened, right? Something was off, and then you start to understand that was probably more of an evaluation or emotional mistake. Because if you think, if you're convinced you're winning, but you're actually losing, or you're actually drawing, but you have to fight for the draw, you will see the drawing line, but you'll just say, I don't want to draw, so let's play something else.
Yeah.
And then that's a losing line. So then that's the making the decision problem and not the seeing the right move problem.
Yeah, that reminds me a lot of there was that game where my opponent made like six straight knight moves in the opening. And I was like, all right, I have to be winning. I just have to be. And I remember telling my coach this, and he was like, no one's winning here, but if anyone's winning, he's winning. Like, he's ahead here. And I was like, it's impossible. He just moved the same knight six times and done nothing. And it's like, well, your pawn structure is slightly worse. He was white. You don't have a combative opening. He was able to get away with making, you know, not great moves, but in the end, it was fine. And that was a good game for me to remind me that it's not about whether I should theoretically be winning because I made better moves, but it's about the position on the board. All the rest of it is irrelevant, but it's what's on the board. So
yeah, I love that because I remember this position as well. And when you let the knight trade off the bishop, in that position, if you ask yourself what piece is better, you will always say the bishop and you will always move the bishop into safety.
Yeah.
Because you let a good piece, the knight was standing so stupidly on e3, blocking the bishop and everything. So it was moving a lot and it was even stupid still. and your bishop was on a nice diagonal and whatever. And so you let yourself make a double pawn and capture your better bishop by a knight. So if you just had this one question, which piece is better? You would just instantly, I would ask you this question, which piece, and you just take the bishop and you move it back. Because it's not about your chess understanding. It's just about the questions you ask yourself. And then you get an answer that is maybe off. And you were like, do I deserve to be better now? Yes. And if I deserve, I should play like that, right?
Yep.
If I were better, I would probably have to attack him because otherwise I can't show that I'm better. So you made an attack and then you ended up being much worse because the attack was nonsense.
Yep.
And if you would have asked yourself that, like, does this attack even make sense? You would have said, no, this looks very stupid.
Yeah.
Why should I even do that? Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it is so funny. Like, if you had just given me that position as a puzzle and been like, what should white do? Leave the bishop there or move the bishop? It would have taken me no time at all. It's been like, well, duh, of course we move the bishop. This is just, why would you even give me this as a puzzle? This is absurd. And then in the game, I'm like, no, we're going to leave the bishop because of reasons. And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely normal that these things happen, but it's very interesting. To me, honestly, it's the most interesting part as a coach. Like when I start to work on these things with people, that's really where you can make a difference as a coach. Because if somebody realizes these kind of things, you can just, when your decision-making process is better, like you can just make so big jumps because suddenly you look back at your games and you think that was a very silly mistake. And if with some mental switches or some habits, you can stop most of the silly mistakes, turns out most games are decided by silly mistakes. Turns out you don't make silly mistakes anymore. You don't lose so much games anymore, right? It's like, oh, what happened?
I'm hearing big jumps. Don't make silly mistakes. These are things I like to hear, Noel. Oh, man. So possibly there's great things in my future is what I'm hearing.
There are only great things in your future, Kevin.
All right, nice. About openings, I remember when we talked last time, you're like, write down on a post-it, it's not the openings, they're fine. And I've really taken that to heart, and I rarely will blame the openings. What I did realize is that there is a line in my d4 opening that I don't like, and it doesn't seem to be something I can fix. It seems to be that is the trade-off with playing the way I'm playing. And so I have been considering some new approaches with d4, but not as a reactionary thing, but more of like a really carefully thought out, like, if I can't find a solution to this, what do I do? But I have not had that reactionary thing where after every loss I'm like, forget it, I need a new opening. So I appreciate that really helped.
That's nice. And when I said like it's maybe time to work on some structures, right, I rarely think that it's about the moves, the like memorization of the opening, but it's just like what are the general ideas for white and black in that opening? Like, is pushing that pawn smart? What is the dream goal of white? What is the dream goal of black? Something I talked about a lot with Josef Dorfman, he was very good at that, is like, what piece should each side trade off? Like, ooh, these kind of ideas. So it's like, in the French, right, in general, in basically every French, if black has this annoying bishop on c8, and you can somehow trade it off against the bishop on f1 or d3, wherever the white one stands, it's amazing. It's just a general idea that you know, and this helps you a lot finding moves later on. Whereas in other openings, it's not as obvious as in the French, but there are still these kind of clues and ideas. Where are the pieces wanting to go? What should you try to avoid? And then you can play better, better moves as well.
Yeah, I'm just realizing, I think what I need to do, especially with what we talked about before, the Carol Kahn advanced, especially with the short variation, is read some materials about what is white trying to do. Because the more I'm looking, the more I'm thinking about it, I'm realizing, like, I'm not even entirely sure what white is trying to do, other than, like, develop their pieces. But I don't quite understand white's plan. And maybe if I had a better hold on white's plan, then I could have a better hold on what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. And there is this book from Flores, I think he's called.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Structures.
Chess Structures.
Yeah, which I like to recommend a lot. This one is pretty good. Yeah. I don't know if he has something on the advanced Caro there, but there might be. But I just enjoy this a lot because you get this overview from white, overview from black. What happens if white just knows their plans and black doesn't? And then just everything goes perfect for white, and then the other way around. And then you can try to mix that. Yeah.
Yeah. I've read through parts of it several times. It's one of those books that I feel like is probably best for what you're talking about. It's like 1800 plus, but I think anyone can get something out of it. So I first read it around 1500. Didn't remember most of it, but got a good feel. And I plan to reread it a couple times, at least the chapters on my openings.
Yeah, that's what I would recommend. Like, first, just do the chapters on your openings. That's where you can really feel if there is a difference, right? Do you even apply that in your games, or is it too difficult yet, or whatever? As a general rule of thumb, like, if most of your games are still decided by hanging pieces, probably that doesn't help as much yet, because even if you know the plans, if you still hang pieces, do you still have a problem? But once, like you, Kevin, right now, that you have... Really, you had little games that were just completely decided by you, one big blunder, where you can say, okay, it's worth it starting to invest time in understanding some things better. And then you can outplay your opponents and force them to make some more mistakes, because the higher up you go, the more you need to force people to make mistakes. Lower down you are, you just need to avoid doing the mistakes yourself and capture those big mistakes from your opponent.
Yep, that makes sense. Should we talk real quick about what I've been studying and what I haven't been studying?
Yeah, let's do it.
I don't know if you're going to be excited or not. All right, so books, they're out. Here's what I decided. I've got enough knowledge to get me to 2,000. It's not about that anymore. Now it's about figuring out how to turn the knowledge I have into skill. So when I say they're out, I mean, like, I will happily... read a chapter on chess structures that's about my structure, right? Something very targeted and specific. I'm rereading a little bit The Power of Pawns, because, like, I'm still terrified, for whatever reason, of the isolated pawn. I just don't want to. And if I get my opponent to have one, I'm like, well, I win. And you're like, no, this is the whole structure. Like, that can be a very powerful tool. And I'm like, nope, that means they lost. And it's like, no, that is not nuanced enough, my friend. But I'm not trying to, like, go out, find the new awesome book and read it. I'm trying to really just hone in on the materials I have, turn that into skill. As such, I tried to focus on three things, which is tactics, mostly chess.com puzzles, calculation work. Every other day, I either do a calculation puzzle or a rapid game, and then playing. So I have my weekly tournaments. I analyze those games. I try to play rapid games 3 times a week and really go into those games. And that's really the bulk of my study. I'm working with someone on visualization as well, since I have aphantasia, so when I close my eyes, I see nothing. It's been useful to sort of work with someone to figure out, like, how do I take that potential weakness and make it a strength in other areas. So, but those are the big things I've been focusing on. Any thoughts? Are you sad that I'm not reading lots of books?
No, actually, it sounds good. Especially, I think what you're saying is basically you're less reactive.
Yeah.
When it comes to buying books and getting books, and that's extremely important. That's like one big problem I see with all these advice out there, right? Like, even for you, even more, right? You get so many great people on the pod, and there are so many different ways you could get better. Yep. And basically, everybody has a little bit of different idea. If you always change, you'll never get there. So it's like, it's not about finding the perfect way, but it's about finding a good way and then sticking to it long enough. So I like that a lot, that you're saying, okay, I have something I'm feeling happy about, so I don't need to add on many things or to change my plan constantly. I like that a lot. I like the idea of playing and analyzing. I like the idea of tactics. In general, as you mentioned yourself, if you manage to get tactics that are human made, that's even a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But I still like it's just so much simpler. Lee Chess and Chess.com puzzles that in general, I also still recommend those, because I just know if I tell somebody you are only allowed to do with books, they might do books, but they might all just end up not doing anything. And that's right. Way worse than somebody saying, okay, I make the trade-off and I just do AI generated puzzles that are online, free and quick for me to see, as long as you're really trying to write down the solution before you make a move. I would say that's like very important. Try to force yourself to do that, because otherwise you again have not such a clear thought process. Mm-hmm. Something in your brain tells you, I want to get over with this puzzle, and then you just make a move, right?
Yeah.
During the game, that's not going to work well. So no. Try to write down, even if you do online puzzles, also for everybody listening, I think that's very important. And then if you want to do it perfect, you get a book done by a player and selected these puzzles, but you can also do these online things. And then you have a coach, right? You're looking at some games.
Yeah, each week like I look at the game I played. What I do is I look at the game I played by myself, no engine. Mm-hmm. And then I look at it with the coach. We usually don't use an engine there either. And then I might make a third pass where I really go in with the engine. Oftentimes I don't, though. Oftentimes after going through with the coach, I feel like, okay, I have a pretty good understanding of where this game went and my mistakes.
I like that. I mean, it would be perfect if you can give off the responsibility to the coach in that sense.
Yeah.
Because then it's the responsibility of the coach to maybe have a look afterwards and just correct something if something was wrong, or maybe look previously, just shortly go through, was there any big blunder or whatever, depending also on how strong they are. But that's, I like that in general as well. And then, yeah, what I would try to maybe do if you have time with your coach is this looking at some, especially now the advanced Carol, you've seen both, like there were some issues there, to then look at 2-3 model games, or just seeing at what could black do, what could white do. And like, what is the reason of every move that maybe, you know, is theory, but like, why is it even played? Like, I remember I was, I think it was with Ganguly, and he was showing the Nydorf, which, well, it was all Grandmasters and International Masters. And it was like saying, why does black play A6? And he said, you have to start early to do this kind of thing. Like, why are we playing A6? So just like understanding the full opening. And some of us couldn't even, you know, just put it in words why black plays A6. Yeah, it's because the knight shouldn't go to B5. Well, actually, it turns out if you play E5 instead of A6, the bishop goes to B5 with a check. And then you can play knight to F5. So like these kind of ideas just help to understand the game even better.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. The last thing about my chess is I think you're a unique person to talk about this. It seems like since I got back from my tournament in December on like January 1st, I have been sick since then. I haven't been sick every week. I've had these blips where I wasn't sick, but because I'm in a family of several people, there's like 20 different illnesses going around. It just feels like I am perpetually sick, and it really makes it hard to study and be effective at chess. I can still do my job because I can do my job at 80%. I can still do other things in my life because I can do them at 70%. But chess is really hard for me to do at 70, 80% because I can really feel the 20% that's missing. As someone who sort of struggled with your brain not being fully functional, any thoughts there? Should I just take more breaks, or should I power through and say, like, hey, I'm not always going to be at full strength anyway in a tournament game? Like, this is useful training time. What's your suggestion there?
So my approach has always been less but better. So just trying to find ways where you can still focus decently well. Obviously, as a pro, when I was still active, I had some training, especially, you know, some opening stuff. Because as a GM, you have to do a little bit more opening stuff. So this I would do occasionally also if I wouldn't feel very well. Because you can analyze openings and you can try to remember some kind of ideas or find some kind of ideas. But the hard stuff, I would really just try to do when you are ready for it. Okay. Because otherwise, you just have this feeling of, I put so much time into it, I'm not enjoying it, and I'm not even getting results out of it. And it just, you get into this vicious cycle. At least you have the thing of like, okay, I've put less time, so I also have less expectation. I'm sick. It's okay to do a little bit less. Mm-hmm. So I would just see like, how much can you do where you say, okay, let's try 15 minutes this day. Like, let's just try to be focused for 15 minutes and then do that well. And then maybe, you know, you can still do half an hour where you say, okay, now this learning how to play a structure takes a little bit less energy. So I'll do that usually later when I don't feel as well anymore. So you can also time, you put different activities in different buckets, and you really try that when you go play a game that you're as fit as possible. And maybe you don't do your regular training on that day just to get some energy, and like these kind of tricks that you can do, but in general, just feel okay with doing less.
Okay, cool. I was really proud of myself on Wednesday. I got sick. I knew I was a little sick when I went to work, but I was like, I don't think I'm very sick. And then I was erasing the board and I almost fell over. Like when I went over this way, my whole body, like, and I had to be like, whoa. And it was really a close call. It would have been embarrassing in front of the students. But then I got home and I was like, oh no, it's chess night. And chess night is the best night of the week. Like, I look forward to this all week. And I almost went anyway. And I was really proud of myself that I was like, Kevin, you know what's going to happen. You're going to make a mistake because you're sick. And then you're going to be frustrated. And then it's like this cycle of bad feelings. So just cancel. Just tell them you're sick. They will understand. They know you're a human being. And, you know, it was all fine. My opponent was repaired with someone. Everything was good. But I was very close to just being like, no, it's chess night. You must go to chess night. So
I like that. I like that. And for things that if you play anyway, I think I've written an article even on that. So one thing that is very helpful, if you feel that you're not, you know, fully 100%, try to really break it down even more simple, the game. Mm. So you just like, today there's no long calculation. Today there is no sophisticated thoughts. Today there just is a piece hanging. Can I develop a piece? What is logical? Does it lose? No, it doesn't. Okay, let's play the logical move. Because you don't want to, you really want to, use all the energy you have for the stuff that really matters. You will play a bit more primitive chess, maybe. Mm. But as I have experienced myself, because I was a pro, I wasn't just canceling or whatever. I could have canceled all the tournaments, basically, because of my brain. I got much better results when I just had a very clear intention of how I want to play chess, mm-hmm. and just accepted that I wasn't 100%. Mm-hmm. And then what went badly is usually when I was like over, you know, over driven and thinking, oh yeah, I absolutely want to win this game and let's do something complex. And I might even outplay the opponent, but at some point they had a lapse of concentration and boom, a game is gone. So that's another point to take into consideration.
Well, I appreciate that. So it sounds like, in summary, my chess has gotten better. I'm no longer losing on one move blunders. It's time to sort out a thinking process. My studying process seems reasonable to you. So I'm on my way. Is that what I'm hearing? I'm on my way.
It's a huge, huge difference, really. From outside, you see these big steps, and from inside, you have every week you did a little bit, so it doesn't seem as big. But I was really very positively surprised. So I think it's a great way. Keep doing what you're doing. Awesome. That's important. But you're on a good way.
This is probably my favorite podcast I've ever done, because when I looked at my games, I was like, yep, my rating's gone up a little bit. So clearly I must be a little better. But also it could just be variance. Like it might just be, you know, whatever. I got opponents that didn't know my openings as well. So it's good. It's good to hear that you're seeing big progress there. So thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. Let's turn to your new course, though. I'm very curious. Why design a course? It's called Beginner Chess Mastery. Why design a course specifically for people who are like 1200 and under? And then the follow-up question is like, what makes someone a 1200 in your mind? Like, well, how did you even say like 1200 equals this? So let's start with those two questions. You field them how you'd like.
Yeah, so why I did it was because I had this other course, Next Level Training, right? We had talked about it on another podcast. Mm-hmm. And I got always more students below this 1200 mark. And big part of that course is that I tell you how to study, but I also tell you what resources are smart for you to use. Mm-hmm. So my work would be, let's go out and research those resources, because maybe I haven't put so much time, because I didn't expect so many people below 1200 to sign up. And I started going out and researching and giving recommendations, and people will say, I don't really understand that. Then I give another recommendation. I say, but this is a little bit too difficult. And then I would look myself at it and I'm saying, no, I don't really like this because of that reason. I don't really love this because of that reason. So I really didn't find like the recommendation I wanted to give. And after some time, I was like, okay, I'll just do it myself. It's okay. It was basically Beginner Chess Mastery has been born because I wanted a recommendation I can fully stand behind for my Next Level Training course. So now I can recommend my own course in my own course.
Okay. So it sounds like it was born out of a need rather than just a desire of yours to make a course for beginners.
Yeah. If you would have asked me 1 year ago, what's your next course? I definitely would have said many things, but not a beginner course. So that was going through the motion of and then working one-on-one with some beginners and seeing how they struggle and maybe how some gaps aren't filled yet. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, let's try it out. Let's see if a grandmaster can do it. And I went deep into trying to think like a beginner and trying to put myself on that, you know, level of, I really don't know much or not anything, not even the rules about chess. What do I need to progress? And if I listen to the testers, they seem to have enjoyed it a lot. So that's nice.
Yeah, that's a really hard thing, for a grandmaster to do, is sort of that like pretending I know nothing and then writing something compelling. And when I started looking through it, I was like, okay, this isn't for me. This is more basic, much of it at least, than where I'm at, which is good. That means that this grandmaster actually did understand what a more beginner needs, because some grandmasters are hilarious and they're like, yeah, a beginner is anyone under like 2000. And you're like, what? No, there is a wide range of people under that. And they're like, no, there's you're bad at chess and you're good at chess. And all those people are bad at chess. And you're like, yes, you're right. They're all bad at chess. I will give you that. But there are gradients there. All right.
Yeah. And the 1200, basically, you asked this as well. Yeah. 1200 basically has been born because I wanted to give some number.
Okay.
But it's obvious, it's very hard, right? I don't think there's any. Because beginner is used so often, right? You have some books that are like beginner pattern recognition. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't think a beginner even knows what pattern recognition is. So pattern recognition for beginners, I don't know if it even works, you know?
Yeah,
I agree. So what is actually beginner? So I thought the only way for people to understand or think that, do I fit or not, is just to give a rating. I know it's not perfect. I'm just saying 1200 chest to come rapid. That's more or less what I'm thinking about, which is like 1400 lead chest or something. And then people will ask, yeah, what about if I have this blitz or this one? So it's just, it's not like if you're 1199, you will love the course. And if you're 1201, you hate the course or you know everything already. But it's just at least giving a ballpark of what, who I thought of when composing this. But I also strongly believe that actually, if you apply everything that is in this course, if you manage to apply that knowledge and do, you know, the things I say, you can also go to 1500 chess.com. It's not like then you're just cut at 1200 and stops working, but I just wanted to give a ballpark for people to understand.
Yeah, I agree. I was looking through the bishop especially, and I was like, I wonder how basic it is. And I felt like as it was going farther and farther along into the bishop, that it was getting to that point where I was like, oh, this is interesting. I imagine that if I spent a lot of time with this course, I would get things out of it, even though it's not for me. And it would be really good for a beginner. Like if I watched it with my daughter, she would get a ton out of it and I would get a little out of it. I think that's how I would sort of define it, that it's like a scale of the higher up you are, the less you get out of it.
I would totally agree with that. That sometimes even stronger players would have like, oh, I've never heard somebody talk about it like that.
Exactly.
Like that's extremely useful. I had this reaction with some people like that have 1700 and I was talking what I'm going to teach in a beginner course, and they looked at me like, wow, I've never heard that. That's actually very useful. Yeah. But that will be much less frequent the stronger you are, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It's like for me, when I think of a 1200, I think of someone who's actually pretty darn good at chess. Like I'm always shocked when I see how good 1200s are, but then they have big holes and make huge blunders, right? Where you're just like, you've got a great game. And then they're like, what if I hang this bishop? And I was like, well, then you're probably going to lose. Cause like as a streamer, I've played tons of people who are much lower rated than me and they give me these terrifying games until right. Or like basic problems, like not quite understanding how this backwards pawn is going to affect you late game, right? Things like that. And just those subtleties. So yeah, I as I was looking through the course, I thought it was well-defined. I was just curious how you thought about a 1200. So yeah, sounds like we're on a similar page. I guess I want to ask you, like, what's your favorite part of this course? What are you most proud of in this course?
Wow, that's a good question. It really turned out very nicely. I usually am very harsh on myself, and I'm really very happy about how it turned out. What do I like most? I do like the very short how to think idea, which is actually something we have talked about. So I just give three questions to ask yourself on a move that helps you guide yourself through the decision. And one of my students has actually come up with a very easy summary of it, which is they, me, what if? First you asked, what is their idea of their last move? Can I use any hanging piece from my opponent? Whatever. Is there anything simple for me? And then what if I play the move that I'm wanting to play? Can my opponent take a free piece? That's it. That's like the ideas that can guide you through a decision. So I like this one. It's very short, but you can really apply it throughout the course. And then the pieces section. I think the pieces section is fun. It's something that doesn't really exist in that sense, or at least I haven't seen much of that. Just trying to say, here's how you use that piece when it's standing alone on the board. Here's how you use it when there are some pawns. How does it interact with pawns? How does it interact with other pieces? I think it just gives you like this general overview of how do I use each piece alone, and then how can I combine the strength of my army. Again, this is a big picture view, that can guide you through the game. It's like, oh, bishops are good on long diagonals. Let's put it on a long diagonal. Like, it's, you don't have to think like, will it be stronger there or there? It's just, you know, some general ideas and mm-hmm. you can use them.
Yeah, I had three favorite parts for myself, and one of them was the pieces section. I thought it was going to really be basic and like geared for an ultra beginner. And I like how you have the different steps where it's like, here's the basics, but then here's some like cool nuances, like with the bishops especially, right? Of like talking about at a very like simplistic way, colors and combinations, right? Of like where you want your pawns, if you have this colored bishop. And I thought you did it in a way that seemed very accessible for a newer player or a lower rated player who could kind of get that like first step to really thinking about like, what should my board look like if for instance, all I have is a light squared bishop, like what would be the advantages and disadvantages. So I thought that was, I was really surprised at how good that section was. I thought it would be much more like, this is how a bishop moves. And I was like, wow, Noel, you have quite a lot of information on this is how the bishop moves, but it was not, that's not what it was. So it was quite good. I really did go into those sections thinking like, I'm a little suspicious of this section. They ended up being my favorites. And then also I was quite impressed. You have like a full opening repertoire. Like that alone would be like a very expensive course on Chessable to have both a white and a black repertoire. So what was your thought process of putting that in there? Do you just think like a 1200 needs like of the beginnings of a repertoire?
No, so there is, I usually am shooting against most opening repertoires, right? I'm saying, guys, don't buy openings. I told you opening is not your problem.
Yeah.
But the problem is there is also a lot of opening talk. So a lot of people have the feeling that opening might be part of their problem. So I was thinking, okay, people need opening principles. That's in the main course, right? Yeah. So I don't think you need an opening repertoire to reach 1200. But I was like, I don't want to sell an opening course because I say all the time that you shouldn't buy them. So why should I sell it? So I said, okay, let's do it that way. I'll give it as a bonus for those that feel that they need it absolutely. But I'm not putting it in the main body. So I don't want to waste people's time of like, hey, you have to go through that opening repertoire. I don't want to make them fear of missing out as well. And I'm like trying to clearly communicate, you don't need it. It's just, if you want it and if you feel that this is holding you back, here is what I think should an opening repertoire for white and black look like. And I think the total is like, it's a little bit over 3.5 hours. I think the bonuses, so you get a white and a black repertoire in 3.5 hours. On Chessable, you get a white repertoire for 20 hours sometimes, sometimes 40 yeah. hours or whatever. So I just try to really simplify it and say, look, here's what a beginner, if you would want to know some starting moves and to know some ideas in the Sicilian, in the Italian, in the French, here's how I would do it. So it was like trying to provide the answer, but not charging for it, just giving it as on top, because I don't really want to sell an opening repertoire. That's the idea behind it.
I think that's a really great approach, is to accept where people are at. You're like, listen, guys, you don't need an opening repertoire, but I also know who you are. I see you. I know if I don't give you one, now you're going to go spend all this time researching an opening repertoire. And so if I'm giving you a course to get you to help get you to 1200, I'm going to be kind to you and give you the resources that I know you're desperate for. Even though I don't think you need them, I know you want them. So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I think that's something I had to learn, because I was all the time, you know, the guy screaming, just don't get it. And everybody was, but I want it. And I was like, just don't get it. So it's like, okay, let's just all understand each other. I'll do that for you. That's okay. But then you can just calmly, and I imagine some people will get the course and they will go through the main body and they will be like, well, I'm already 1200 now. Like, maybe I really didn't need it, right? So for some people, it could really be just the calming thought that there would be if it would be a problem for them. Mm. And maybe going through the course, they already see how much the other stuff helps them get better at chess. Mm-hmm. But there might also be some people that just also want the opening repertoire, which is also fine. So the quality, I think, is good. It's just stripped down to a very simple opening repertoire. And the idea is not that it's a lifetime opening repertoire, because then you overstudy.
Yeah.
You study lines that you don't need at the moment. So it's really just like, what is actually the main move in the opening repertoire is usually what is going to happen on a beginner game, and not what is the main theory here.
Oh, okay. Right? That's
a big difference. So in the Spanish, for example, after A6, more than 50% of beginners below 1200, you can see that on Lee Chess, for example, with this, you can click in the games that you select.
Mm-hmm.
And over 50%, I think 60%, just take bishop takes c6.
Yeah.
You take back d takes c6, and nearly 50% take on e5.
Yep.
So that's a line that is basically never played and will just be some sideline somewhere in a real opening repertoire. But actually, as a beginner, you will face most of the time this one. So you need to know exactly how you can react against it. While the sophisticated stuff with the bishop moving back and then this idea, that idea, mm-hmm. will basically never happen. So I'm also not going to talk a lot about that. So that was really the idea. It's very practical. Okay.
So really making a practical opening for people under 1200.
Yes, yes.
I could see a lot of people buying this just for the opening repertoire. I'm sorry, Noel, this might happen. You're going to be known as the opening repertoire guy. And you're going to be like, what? That's not the point at all.
I mean, it would be kind of ironical, no? It would be.
Everyone, go get Noel's new opening course. I think there's some other things in it. It's fine. You can skip all that. Oh my goodness. Okay. Just
go straight to the opening. Yeah.
Yeah. I also liked your material on basic king pawn endgames. I thought that was really important to work that in there and be like, okay, this is like, you had like, this is the basic setup. You need to know, is this a draw? Is this a win? Whose move is it? I think you're right. I think those very basic king pawn endgames are really important and they're easy to learn, right? They only take a minute or two. And then if you revisit them twice, then you got them. And they're so critical because, like, it's just that thing of knowing, like, can I trade down to a win or am I trading down to a draw? And if you can make that distinction, that's like 200 points. Like, that's,
that
just seems like such a critical piece of knowing endgames.
And just the confidence of how you play, actually, if you manage to, you know, just know that, you will just play much more confident if you are pawn up, because you think, okay, if it would happen, I would, you know, more or less be able to convert that, right? So that's also something that can help from that point of view. And that was one part I was also thinking about, because I think there's some of the rules. It's like where your king has to stand related to your pawn, that it's automatically winning and so on, is again something that I haven't really read anywhere previously. And it's just like trying to think, how can I put it into words? Not just this position is winning, but this is not, but like, what can the person remember? I think that can be very useful as well.
Yeah. I agree. I will never forget when I learned opposition and I became an endgame god. I was rated like 800. And man, when I learned opposition, I would trade down to every endgame winning or losing and I would win it. I was basically Capablanca till I hit about 1,000. And then everyone knew opposition. I was like, what? What? I'm not an endgame god anymore? With those 200 points, they were fun, Noel. They were so fun.
That's nice, yeah. It's all that's why I know the new problems, right? It's oh, I solved this problem, nobody around me knows it. And then suddenly it's like, okay, I gotta learn something new.
Yep. It's like the kid that knows the four move checkmate and no one else in the area does, and you're like, he's unbeatable. He always wins the game in four moves. There's no way to beat him. You're like, I'm pretty sure there is.
You ever thought about not getting checkmated on F7?
Yeah, possibility. I do remember that was like one of the very first things I talked to my daughter about. I was like, all right, here's the deal. People are going to try to four move checkmate you. The number one thing is just defending that. Then after we can do that, now we're going to talk about opening principles. But we're not even going to talk about opening principles until we understand this is how you stop the four move checkmate. And then she like went to this thing and lost to a four move checkmate. And she was like, I know. I just forgot to do that. And I was like, all right, that's fine. I just want to make sure you understand.
Now she knows it.
Now she laughs at people when they try to four move checkmate. She's like, this person, they don't know anything. I'm 500 now. They're only like 200. That's why they went for it. And I'm like, okay, all right, cool. Yeah, she did just cross 500.
That's how Beth Harmon started.
Yesterday, she crossed 500. She's on her way.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah,
one step at a time.
Yeah, I'm making my game better. Her game is getting way better than my game. Like the rate, I'm very impressed. She's doing great. It's been fun to watch.
That will be the story of your life from now on. I fear, yeah.
Yep. Pretty soon she'll pass me. That's fine. I'm rooting for her.
That's nice.
Yeah. She said she wants to race me to master. And I was like, well, since you can make master, and it seems unlikely I'll make master, I don't really want to do that race. Let's race to 1800. I might be able to beat you to 1800. Yeah, we'll see. All right, Noel. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Your new course looks really amazing for anyone who, I don't even know what rating I would put on it. I think 1200 is a good starting point. But even if you're over 1200, you may find a lot of stuff useful. Certainly if you're under 1200, lots of good stuff there, including a full repertoire. Yes.
Let's go.
So, Noel, thanks so much. I appreciate your evaluation of my game. And I must say, I'm still, like, all day, I'm going to be walking around going like, hey, did you hear? Did you hear? Noel thinks I'm better at chess now. Did you hear? And my wife's going to be like, what? Who cares? I don't. Why are you talking to me about this? And I'm going to tell her like six times. It's going to be a great day. All right. Thanks so much, Noel. So, everyone out there, I hope this is the week where you get better at chess and your rating shows it and everything's awesome. And if it's not, come back next week. I'll have another guest for you. And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.